Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 187 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacket. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. It's going to be absolutely massive. So you may have heard that we did receive a decision from the Federal Court of Appeal on our huge lawsuit against the federal government. I have that decision and some early insights because I just received that decision literally an hour ago. So anyway, more stuff by the time you're watching this tomorrow from my time here. There may be other developments, but I'm going to share what I have right now with you, as well as a huge political roundup with Wilson. I will tell you the stuff, if you're not as plugged in to politics as we are over here, the stuff you're going to hear in this podcast is just wild. It's shocking. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Canada right now, and we're going to talk about pretty much most of it. So anyway, stay tuned. All that and more. CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Ready, Aim, Shop. Bullseye North is where passion meets precision. Discover a huge selection of top-notch rifles, accessories, and ammo. Whether you're perfecting your aim at the range or gearing up for hunting season, Bullseye North has you covered with free shipping on orders over $300, including ammo. Some exclusions apply. Check out bullseyenorth.com and remember to subscribe to their newsletter, bullseyenorth.com. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right. So let me start off by saying this. We're going to talk primarily about our court case, right? That's the most important thing to talk about. But in this episode, there is a lot of really stuff. There's some shocking things to hear in this episode. It's going to be really long, but there, if you're not involved in politics every day, like I am, like Wilson, like a lot of gun owners, like a lot of Canadians, you will be shocked with what you're going to hear in this episode. So make sure that if you're ever going to listen to an hour and whatever long CCFR radio podcast episode, it's this one. So a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff that's going to affect you and your family. Let's start with this chunk that is going to affect you and your family, and it's the decision on our federal court of appeal case. And you probably have already heard, because this happened yesterday by the time you're hearing it, that we lost in the court of appeal. We lost in the federal court to begin with, and then we appealed and we lost this case too, at least in my opinion, for all intents and purposes, I guess you could say. So the decisions are a little bit more complicated than that, but yeah, we lost. Now, what does that mean for you? It means some pretty, let me put it to you this way. A member of our legal team called this decision terrifying. Okay. And I'm going to tell you how it's going to affect you. So when you file an application like we did, right, when you sue the government, you're basically asking the court, hey, you know what? We have these questions and we'd like you to give us an opinion, a binding opinion on these questions. We'd like to give you and we'd like to, for you to give us the answer. I've been talking a while today. So in our original case, we asked about like their self-defense and, you know, depriving us of specific firearms impedes our ability to defend ourselves under certain circumstances from wildlife or whatever, or even from violence, whatever. And we asked for about property rights, and we had a couple of charter questions. We had a whole bunch of things going on there, right? And we knew that we were probably going to be unsuccessful in all those things, because the truth of the matter is you don't have any rights in Canada. You really don't. And this case just proves it yet again, right? The charter is a joke. Anyway, it only applies if you're like a mass murderer or something like that, and you're being treated unfairly by the prison system. For some reason, the courts are there, Johnny on the spot, to help them out. Just like, oh, this is cruel and unusual. Mandatory minimums? Oh, 3 years for trafficking firearms? No way. You know, this is beyond the pale. So anyway, but seems like. Anyway, but there was one really important aspect of this case they were very interested in, and it was the government's ability to ban guns using OICs that had carried consequences like billion-dollar consequences and the loss of the unreasonable seizure of property from licensed gun owners, like law-abiding, tax-paying, responsible, the best citizens in the country. They would have their property taken, and the government would offer basically no explanation for that, using an order in council, which they were never meant for those kinds of things. And how that was formulated is, in the criminal code, there's verbiage in there that allows the government to classify firearms into one of the three classes. And so the government can essentially ban guns, any guns it wants, by reclassifying them to prohibited, right? And then there was, when all that was written, there was a passage in there. And what that was, there was supposed to, rather than handing unlimited, unbridled power, tyrannical level power to any government that just comes along that can get elected, there was a little provision in there that said, unless these guns are reasonable in the opinion of the governor and council, which is sort of an entity made up by the government itself, but it's supposed to be governed by something, right? Have some reason to do the things that it does. Unless in the opinion of the governor and council, these firearms were reasonable for hunting, right? It's not just about sport shooting anymore. High hunters, guess what? It's a bad day for you as well. And sport shooting. Okay. Now that was put in there for a reason. It was put in there to push back an overreaching government, to show citizens, people that have licenses, don't worry. There's some hedge against tyranny there. And yeah, I'm going to use some inflammatory terms. So now I'm just some dum-dum off the street. I'm a nobody. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that. But based on my, you know, layman's experience, listening to all this happen for whatever, right? 5 years straight and everything else that I'd been through before. One, it seems like there's a widely accepted principle, legal principle in Canada, that if something is in legislation, it's there for a reason. And it can't mean nothing. And I never heard any courts push back on that. So it seems to be an accepted legal principle. So here's the decision. Now, I only got this 90 minutes ago from when you're watching this now. So here's the decision. And basically the most terrifying part is in section 56. I'm going to read this for you. Anyway, check it out. This is the Chief Justice of the Federal Court of Appeal. I have not been persuaded that the governor and council made a mistake in considering public safety in assessing whether the prohibited firearms were reasonable for use in Canada for hunting and sport shooting. It may well be that from the sole perspective of a sensible hunter or sportsman, it makes no sense to ban firearms that are well suited, and this is important, or even specifically designed for hunting. A specifically designed hunting rifle or sport purposes. But the governor and council, because of its broader public policy role, must also consider other factors such as public safety. As this court stated more than once, cabinet is the most senior policymaking body in the government, and because of its role at the apex of the executive branch, is best situated to develop government policy and to assess the public interest. See, for example, here's some case precedent. For that reason, factually suffused decisions made by cabinet, I never saw any real factually anything from cabinet, but I'll get to that in a second, based on wide considerations of public policy, will be relatively unconstrained and will not normally be second-guessed by the courts. So in fact, what they've said here is that even though the governor and council, the GIC, we're going to call it, even though the GIC had the opinion for over 50 years or whatever, right? Since the early 90s. So let's say, you know, whatever, 35 years. that all of these guns were completely appropriate for hunting and sport shooting. Now, all of a sudden, the GIC is going to change its mind. The government never offered why it thought those guns were okay then and why they don't think they're okay now. In fact, even in this document, they refer to the REAS. So when the government brings an OIC, an order in council, when they make a decree that something is whatever, in this case banned, they provide a REAS, which is a regulatory impact analysis statement I think it's something like that. I could have that acronym wrong, but it's called the REAS. And basically, if you look in it, this is the government's justification of that OIC. If you look in it, it's just a bunch of rhetoric. It's like, oh, for public safety, we know that as, increased proliferation, like there's no data in there. It's just the government's like literal political position. That's the evidence. Okay. So anyway, what this basically says is that they're saying like the GIC can change its opinion because it's the government. It's the cabinet of the sitting government. So that provision was supposed to stop or, constrain an overreaching government, but they're saying the opinion of the GIC is just whatever the cabinet of that government says, of that government's insider says. So in essence, in practical reality, that section does mean nothing, right? Because it can change depending on what the government wants. So how can it be relevant in any way? So, and again, this all goes back to the government's use of an order in council, just a little legal instrument. No legislation, no debate, no input from opposition parties, no input from Canadians, no nothing. It's an executive order to launch something like this buyback at whatever it's going to cost, $10 billion, and destroy the relationship that probably a million Canadians have with their government, at least so far, because they haven't gotten all those semi-autos yet. Or all those semi-auto 22s that they banned, or all those bolt actions that they actually banned, not all of them, but some of them, and all the shotguns, not all, but some that they banned. Once they roll that out, and Mark Carney just made his policy on guns, just released that policy. He's moving forward with the buyback. Once they get that rolling, why wouldn't they take handguns too? If they were gonna do all that and spend the whatever, $5-10 billion to do it, why wouldn't they include handguns? And that's an easy sell. I think they were saving it, right? They're like, hey, this is an easy sell, red meat for the base, right? We could get elected another time, a sixth time, by throwing that at the base. Hey, you know what? Almost all of the firearm-related violence in Canada is committed with handguns. Why should anyone own a handgun? They're only designed to kill. We're going to grab those too. Liberals go, yay, right? Why wouldn't they do it? And then once all that's gone, they got no more red meat for the base. What's next? Well, they don't want you, for some reason, they don't want you to have guns, right? They don't want you to have guns because nothing was going on in 2014, let's say, before the Liberals showed up. Safest Canada's ever been. Lowest firearm-related violence numbers the country's ever seen since they started keeping numbers on those kinds of things. There wasn't a problem. So what are they going to do? What do they got next? High power sniper rifles and their variants that some people are using these high power sniper rifles for hunting. Some people, they're military weapons like the Remington 700, otherwise known as the M24, the Lee Enfield designed specifically for the battlefield, the 1908 Brazilian Mauser specifically for the battlefield and all of its variants. Why wouldn't they start chipping away at that? Why wouldn't they ban them all? They could get every gun out of Canadian hands. Maybe you get pellet guns under 500 feet per second. Why wouldn't they do it? It's red meat for their base. Anyway, this was a big problem for everybody. And anywhere else where this kind of thing shows up in law, this precedent says, hey, the courts will not interfere with governments that want to overreach for anything. So anyway, I know I've been talking a long time, 11 minutes. But it's important that you understand kind of why this is really bad, not just because we lost. There was always a chance we were going to lose. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't fight because there's a chance you're going to lose. It's funny because, of course, you're going to have the anti-gunners jumping up and down. Look, see, they failed and this and that. It's like, well, that's no excuse not to fight, right? We made them fight for every inch. We took it to them. We filed three injunctions. We, you know, deposed every single witness they brought forward. We fought them every, we took it to the Court of Appeal. While everyone else threw up their hands and ran for the exits, we stayed in there and fought just like we said we would from day one. I do not regret fighting these people, and we're not finished fighting them yet, especially right now. We need to focus on the election because that's going to determine everything. Even when we filed this, it's like you litigate till you can legislate. We are going to fight them and make them fight for every inch right up until we could get the government changed to a more favorable government. Because of the whole time, as we said, the solution to our problem is a political solution. That's why we had to become more political rather than just educational or public relations. That's why we got dragged into this here, because that is the only real medium-term solution to our problem. Because in Canada, this whole fight, if we get the conservatives and all this stuff goes away over the course of whatever, 8-9 years, the next generation will have to fight again, because that's how our system works. The government has supreme power in Canada, and nobody's going to stop them unless they have some political, unless the court seems like just all, that's the, unless they have a political reason to do it. I don't know. It's pretty interesting, but I'm not sorry that we did this. I'm absolutely happy that we did. I felt bad about this for about 120 seconds, but I don't have time to, you know, be like, oh man, it would have been great to have a win. But yeah, sure, it would have been great. But you know what? I got something bigger going on, and that's an election. And so if this bothers you, and it should to some degree, take that energy and go volunteer for your local conservative EDA. Get out there, grab 20 people and take them to the polls. Make this, use this for motivation and continue to fight. You should fight even harder because of this. So, and if we lose the election, then fine. We'll have another chat and figure out where we go from there. But that doesn't mean that you get fatigued and upset and defeated and dragged down when you're like literally 10 days from the finish line. To find out whether you're going to win this race or not, you need to put your foot to the floor and don't let these people break you. All right. Okay. Couple of, sorry that was so long, man. Just maybe it was therapeutic for me, right? I had to get that off my chest. Okay. Couple of things I just want to mention before we bring Tracy on. Do you want to send out a shout out to Wild, everybody over at Wild TV? Wild TV has been playing our commercials, same thing with Sportsman Channel. And these were the Get Out the Vote commercials. And I was watching Wild TV because my show's on there, my other show, obviously. And they've been playing way more than we paid them to play. So I just want to say thank you to Wild TV for being part of the community and putting a little bit extra, you know, for all of us there. They're really working for us. So big shout out and a big thank you to all the team over at Wild TV. Thank you. And I also want to say thank you to Scott Funk. So he's the owner of Funker 530. You may have remember those Funker Tactical videos and Funker 530, the battlefield videos and whatnot. And Scott donated a bunch of ad time at no cost for the CCFR and by extension gun owners across Canada. So we all owe Scott a really really big thank you. Hopefully we're going to get the vote out using his network as well. So I just want to say thank you. And it's just great when the whole community, everyone contributes something. That's just awesome. And Sean Alexander from Kailani, because Sean is always out there doing things, promoting the CCFR. I got an email from him that I got to deal with, him trying to promote us and stuff. And just everyone else that is contributing and just helping the CCFR in any way. You know, we've created something really special. Really appreciate all that. Thanks for listening to all my babbling. Let's get Tracy on. All right, we are back in via Skype. We've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson! Wilson!
That's a good one. That's your rock and roll voice.
Was it? Yeah. Well, my voice is starting to sound like that all the time, actually.
What, like you're always screaming?
Yeah, like I've been screaming all night or whatever. In fact, oddly enough, I may actually have to give up singing.
No.
Yeah, my voice is getting a little bit worse. Maybe it was the treatment, right, or whatever. But it's just been really weird lately. Whenever I got to sing, I sing every 2 weeks. And whenever I got to sing, I practice on my weeks off. And mm-hmm. my voice has just been blowing out. So, I don't know, man.
Maybe you just need more rum or something. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is.
I gave up the rum, and that's why I'm losing my voice.
That's what's happening.
All right.
It's medicinal.
It's just medicinal. It's for my glaucoma. All right.
Yes.
Let's get at it because we have so much stuff to go through. And this time it's almost entirely political. So we're going to have to actually speed through this stuff. And I'd be surprised if we can make it in half an hour. So let's get started.
Okay.
Now, the first thing that we need to talk about is there was recently another prohibition. It happened before we did the last podcast, but I wasn't really prepared to talk about it. Plus, I wanted to look into it a little bit more. And I guess this is something that I'm going to kind of go through because I might know a little bit more because I own one of these things. But the RCMP have been at it again. Of course, completely enabled and encouraged by the Liberal government to just ban firearms for basically whatever, any reason. And I just want to, I'm going to try to rattle this off as quickly as I can, but this is very significant. So the rifle that they banned is called the Crusader Arms Crypto. Now, this was a rifle that was specifically designed by Crusader Arms to be compliant, to not fall into the definition of assault style rifle that was put in Bill C-21, meaning that it has proprietary magazines and cannot accept any magazine other than these proprietary ones. So in Crusader Arms crusade, as it were, to comply with the law and the spirit of the law, even, they put money and time and effort and all the rest of that stuff into creating this firearm to maybe preserve the shooting sports for a little bit longer. And then the RCMP are like, yeah, that's a variant of whatever. And I guess the reason why this is significant is if you think back in 2020, Bill Blair swore up and down, nothing that we're doing will have any negative impact on the lawful, activities of hunting and sports shooting. Of course, that was a complete lie. They basically destroyed sports shooting and taken a chunk out of hunting. And then they went, on and on and on about how much they respect licensed gun owners. And then they finally had to admit, yes, we're banning pretty much all sporting rifles and some hunting guns. But don't worry, there's 19,000 models left. And I heard that time and time again. I was going to put a bunch of clips together, but we have too much to go through. That's why I'm also trying to talk very quickly. Oh, 19, don't worry, just replace them. And every time you would go out and replace them, and many, probably 100,000 gun owners know this, every time you go and replace them, they would ban it again. They'd wait a while, wait till everyone spends their money, ban them again. And of course, their position is, serves you right for believing anything that we have to say. For believing the government, you deserve to lose thousands and thousands, in some cases, $10,000. So after all this, they come at the very end to a rifle that's specifically designed to comply with their vision. And they ban that anyway. And they didn't ban it right away. They waited, a year till a lot of them are out there. People spent all the money and then they decided just do this at the 11th hour. Unbelievable.
Right. Well, and it's interesting to me because they had the opportunity back in December of 2024, they released, 300 and some firearms that they were adding to the ban list. The crypto survived it, was not on that list. Then March 7th, they did the same thing, another 179 models. Again, the crypto survived that too, was not on that list. And then here they come along, don't announce it to anybody, and ban the C-21 compliant Canadian-made rifle. So yeah, when they tell you, don't worry, you know, it's just these firearms, you can buy something else, you can't believe them because they've proven that's a lie over and over again.
Yeah. And if I think back when we were asking for an injunction in our court case when it first started, because we filed three injunctions, we're the only firearm rights organization to do that. And they were very expensive, especially the first one, because there was a lot of research involved. We were asking the judge, Judge Gagne, hey, they're destroying, shooting sports. And if that's the intent, then they're doing a great job of it. If it's not the intent, this is a problem. Let everyone use their firearms while our case makes its way through the court system. And it's a completely reasonable ask, right? Yes. And the government's lawyer, what was it? Was it Milne? Was it Jordan Milne or Justin Milne? I can't remember this guy's name. But I think it was him, if memory serves me. And he's like, oh, there are so many models still on the market. This is by no means going to impede any of this stuff. This is just a made up thing by the, by the applicants, that this is somehow going to impact. Just don't worry. They can simply, and that's in the transcripts I didn't have time to go look for that because we're busy, right? But that's in the transcripts way back 5 years ago. Well, 4 years ago. Just amazing. And just, yeah, you just, and this is why you can't, this is why faith in institutions is plummeting, because they lie to your face and they laugh at you.
Yeah, so, they do.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So that's a, banning the crypto is a real problem. And, you know, none of these things, it's only going to get worse from here. If the conservatives don't at least get a minority mandate, it's over if they don't.
That's true.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of these crazy folks, the conservatives released a piece of their another portion of their platform, and part of it is addressing like the hardest core criminals we have in the country. Of course, you can, and I'm saying this sort of half hypothetically, you can literally murder people and end up on bail and end up with house arrest. Right? Like just insanity, right? That's why there's this massive crime wave. So the conservatives said, okay, you know what? The courts don't, they don't want to lock up criminals for some reason. And they just want to keep letting them out for some reason. And that's complicated. But what we're going to do is we're going to make sure, we're going to use a notwithstanding clause that the worst criminals, the most violent criminals will have to stay in jail. Mm-hmm. And liberals are losing their minds.
Yeah. Well, this is really interesting because what they're upset about is there was a couple years ago, back during, let's rewind back to the Harper days. In the Harper days, if you committed a mass murder, you went out and you killed six people, you could get a life sentence for each murder that you committed. Well, those were, that was overturned by the Supreme Court of Canada as being unconstitutional, that to stack up all these life sentences one after the other. So what Polyev is suggesting is he's going to use the notwithstanding clause, which is in the Constitution under Section 33, in order to return to that. Because what happens now is whether you murdered one person or you've murdered six people, it's the same. You shouldn't get a deal for murdering more people is basically the gist of it. And of course, you're right. The liberal outrage is wild. I can only imagine if they put that much passion into defending, you know, the families, the survivors, the victims. The other thing that he's talking about doing is just automatic refusal of bail. So if you are sentenced, you know, for the most heinous crimes, if you're sentenced to 25 years, you're not going to be eligible for bail or parole in 15. Excuse me. And the reason for that is when you've got these heinous crimes where people should never be out of prison again, even though, you know, I've seen some conjecture from the liberals saying, well, how many mass murderers or these types of people are running around? Well, that's not the point. The point is every time they have a bail hearing, the families, the survivors, or even the victims themselves have to endure going through their parole hearing just to have it refused. So just save the trauma to these people by just refusing to do that. So, yeah. It's interesting because I made a tweet about this saying the Liberal government fully supports confiscating legally acquired property from people like you and I who've done nothing to warrant it. We've committed no crime and we don't deserve that. That's totally fine. But to expect mass murderers to be accountable for their crimes and all of their victims, well, that's just a step too far.
Well, like, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's funny because it was the same thing that I had brought up before. This is years ago, is if you remember carding, if you talk to Toronto, anyone from the Toronto City Police Service that was around in those days when carding was happening, they will tell you it worked awesome. And that's one of the reasons why we had such low firearm-related violence rates back in 2013, 2014, around that, after a while of carding. And I had Toronto City Police officers, we have a lot of members and supporters in the TPS, and they come to the shows and stuff when I'm in Toronto and they come and talk to me and they're like, yeah, well, it took a couple of years for it to take hold. And this is why it worked. And they explained it to me. And I've had numerous different guys explain that to me. It was a flawed program. Fine. But what was the program? People that were suspected or at least had some suspicion of being involved in gangs or whatever on the street, and that included innocent people maybe that were dressed like gang, whatever, right? Whatever the shortcomings of the program were stopped and asked for ID. And if they were a gang member or whatever, then they kind of get shaken down a little bit, right? And
Or you can identify them. So if they've got warrants, you can arrest them.
Yeah. And sometimes these guys would carry guns and they would actually intercept the firearm, right? Right then and there, and seize the gun. And like this, there's a bunch of reasons why it worked. And there's a handful of reasons, to be completely fair, why it was an overreach, right? But it's funny. People lost their minds at the audacity that to stop the murder in downtown Toronto, that people would be asked for their ID when they're walking in areas of high crime areas, that they would be asked for ID. Like, how outrageous is it that someone would be asked for ID, maybe even more than once? Okay. Yeah. But spending $10 billion confiscating firearms from literally a million Canadians that haven't done a single thing is like, well, if it saves one life, it's worth it. So it's that completely, you know, this moral compass that's just spinning, just can't find north no matter what happens. That part is definitely frustrating. But yeah, liberals haven't changed at all.
No, you can always count on them to make the absolute worst judgment calls
when it comes to ethics and morals, that's for sure.
Yes.
So anyway, all right. Now, we want to talk a little bit about the polls, because that's a big thing. Some people are saying, well, the polls have got to be BS. Other people are worried about the polls. If we were trusting the polls right now, there would be a extremely clear liberal majority government coming in a couple of weeks. So some people have gotten angry at the conservatives, like, you blew the lead. Well, you've done a lot of research on this. And why don't you give us your conclusions on whether or not the conservatives have blown this lead?
Yeah, well, you'll remember back 3 or 4 months ago, the tables were flipped completely. The conservatives were polling for like a super majority, polling really high. The liberals, I think, were fighting over fourth place, right? So yeah, everything has changed around. Now, has Poilievre blown his lead? No. His numbers have been stable. They've maintained throughout. What's changed is the complete collapse of the other parties, like the NDP and the Bloc. And interestingly enough, on CFRA, they were talking about that, because I think one of the pollsters had the conservatives polling at 39% and I think the liberals at 43%. It's all relatively around the same numbers. Some are a little bit higher. But for the sake of this conversation, they had the conservatives at 39%. And Bill Carroll said, if you go back in history to 2011, when Stephen Harper won a conservative majority government, he did it with 39%. Like, in any normal situation, 39% is a majority government. But because of the absolute fallout from the NDP and the Bloc polling so low and the Liberals being able to pick that up, that's why they're polling so high. So Poilievre hasn't blown anything. It's, if anybody, we can once again thank Jagmeet Singh for completely sucking, because that's why we're in this position. So, you know, I'm not one of those people that says the polls are fake or do you believe them? I mean, if I believed them 3 months ago when they were in our favor, then, you know, I have to believe them now. But the poll that matters most, and this is true till the end of time, is the voting booth. That is the poll that matters the most. So it's easy to answer a poll. And, you know, I think some of them are weighted a little funny, but it's easy to answer a poll saying, yeah, you got my support. I've been door knocking. People are like, yeah, you got my support. Does that translate to an actual vote? Because it doesn't matter how you answer a poll. It doesn't matter how you answer a door knocker. It doesn't matter if you have a lawn sign in your yard. If you don't go and vote, it's completely meaningless. So the get out the vote will be the key to any chance of winning this. And there is absolutely a chance of that happening. We've also got the debates this week. So yeah, there's a lot up in the air, but no, Poilievre has not blown his lead. His numbers have stayed relatively stable throughout. It's all the other numbers that have gone crazy.
Yeah, well, so. And leave it to Jagmeet Singh. You know, he would have been the official opposition had he pulled the pin, but he held out for corruption. He held out for his pension. And now that's all over, he actually destroyed the NDP, like decimated the party, like down to 6%. Decimated.
He's going to lose his seat.
Yeah.
Too.
Even he's even when he is blowing himself up politically, he actually finds a way to wreck it for everybody else still. He's still somehow helping the liberals, even in his destruction of the NDP. Isn't that interesting, hey?
Yes, he's still helping the liberals.
Like just pure toxicity. In fact,
we can directly thank him for this. Yeah.
Like in his success and his failure, purely toxic to the average Canadian, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, what a disaster.
He's like the anti-Forrest Gump. Remember the movie Forrest Gump where everything he touched turned to gold, everything worked yeah. out? Jagmeet is the opposite of that. Like literally Canada's biggest failure.
Yeah. Yeah, everything he touches turns to poop.
Yep, sure does.
Anyway. Oh, man. I don't know how the NDP, you know, like just the party faithful have not just lost their minds looking for a leadership review, even like 6 months ago. I just
even imagine being like an NDP MP. I think of our friend Alistair McGregor quite often and wonder like deep down, what's he thinking? Like, I don't know, man.
Alistair
you know, he
McGregor.
Supported him right through it all. And look where you are now.
Well, he's no better. Anyway, okay, let's move on. Now, speaking of things that don't make a lot of sense, it's you as I'm sure people know, you pay a lot of attention to what's going on politically. I do as well. And because now's for this is for all the marbles, right?
Yes.
And man, you know, you wonder why people get the feeling like the system's rigged. And as I said earlier, why people have lost all faith in institutions. It's not for no reason. There are completely overt, demonstrable reasons for this collapse in confidence. So I've got a whole list we're going to go through as quickly as humanly possible. But if you look at the cheating and the skullduggery, for lack of another word that I would rather use, that the liberals are engaging in, not only the liberals, but the bureaucracy in Canada, the legacy media, like all of them are in the tank for Carney. And you can see it. It's in front of your face. So the first thing is this whole stealing and defacing and destroying candidate signs, conservative candidate signs.
So you see this usually in every election. There's a little bit of this, but it has been
on all sides.
Insane. Yeah, you see it from both sides. But it's been absolutely insane in this election. And my favorite example is there's an Ottawa area not an MP, a conservative candidate in Nepean, which is kind of a western suburb of the city of Ottawa, Barbara Bell. And Carney parachuted himself into that riding after getting rid of Chandra Arya, which you remember, we've talked about it before. So she's part of the Nepean Conservative Association. Obviously, they've been putting out their election signs. You know, they went from what was a regular campaign. It's been blown right up because now she's running against Mark Carney. But these campaigns keep stuff, you know, election after election, they put it in storage. There's a lot of money invested into installing these signs. Literally thousands of signs go out. And so the big arterial signs, the great big ones that they put out on the main roads or alongside highways or major intersections, they use wood and they build these frames and you've seen them. I'm sure we've all seen them driving around and they put these up. Well, because those get reused election after election, the Nepean Conservative Association paints the tops of their pieces of wood conservative blue and they label it with NCA, Nepean Conservative Association. So she's noticed that a lot of her signs were missing, gone. And upon further closer inspection, they not only are ripping down the conservative signs off these wooden frames, but they're stapling up Mark Carney liberal signs right over top on her wood, which is crazy. So there's been a lot of that. Another area that's been really, really hard hit and really bad for that is another Ottawa riding, Ottawa South. He's running against David McGuinty, public safety minister. And that's been absolutely wild. The vandalism. There's another riding where there's a viral video going on where they caught a protester, you know, going around smashing conservative signs, just totally out to lunch. Yeah, it's pretty bad. I've been door knocking myself and we go in pairs. It's simply not safe because you come across an angry leftist voter and yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. So the sign thing is big. I mean, there's even a sign in my little town that got the conservative sign. They cut the middle out of it, which of course our candidate, Brad Viss, made a joke post, stood stuck behind the sign. So his face was sticking out of there. I'm still here kind of thing. And now they actually found the piece and taped it back in and but that's only the tip of the iceberg because then you have the button scandal. Where liberal operatives were handing out Trumpy kind of style buttons at conservative events. Mm-hmm. And of course they're caught. And
they're caught.
Yeah. And then Mark Carney's like, oh, I've reassigned them. It's like, what? You know?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, when Paul Chiang was caught, encouraging people to turn in a guy to the Chinese embassy for a bounty. So that he could be shipped back and probably executed in China by the ruling party there. He didn't even fire him. Like this, like corruption and ethical misconduct is completely fine. And it's alive and well in the Liberal Party, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you have Debates Canada or Canada Debates or whatever that agency is called.
Debate Commission. Yes.
And now they've broken their own eligibility rules you and I were talking about this earlier, that may have been put in there to keep the PPC out.
Yeah.
They broke in their own rules and allowed the Greens in.
Yeah, that's right. They changed the criteria to be eligible to participate in the debates a few years back. And, you know, it's largely believed that it was intentional to keep Max Bernier and the PPC out. But the Green Party, there's a couple of criteria. You have to have a certain amount of polling, like you got to poll a certain amount. And anyways, the Greens are polling way below that. So by their new rules that they implemented, they changed to keep the PPC out. If they were following that, then the Green would also be ineligible. However, they're letting the Green in. Like, I don't know. I'm not climbing on the purple wagon here, but if it's either fair or it's not. You know,
well,
either you let everybody in or you don't. But if you're going to set a certain criteria, then you have to stick to it. It's ridiculous that the Green is being allowed to come to the debates and the PPC isn't.
So. Well, yeah. And although they do have seats, So, but if you think about, well, why are they doing that? I mean, to me, the way that I look at it, and you know, I could very well be biased, but the way I'm looking at it is you only have two contenders. You have two people that right now are holding over 90% of the polling, the votes basically in the country. And everyone wants to see those two guys go head to head because it's for everything. So what do they do? They pack in Jagmeet Singh, who's sitting at 6%. He's a nobody now, other than a guy that just wrecks everything he touches. Then you have the Bloc, and then they have to squeeze the Green. And so you have three other people who are nowhere near ever getting into power. And now you're going to take all that time during the debate and you're going to split it between five people when it should be between two. And there's only one candidate that helps.
Oh, yeah.
That's Mark Carney.
Well, we know exactly.
Yeah.
Every time Mark Carney has to speak publicly, he's just not a good public speaker. Now he keeps saying, well, I'm not a politician. Well, this is a political job. Maybe having somebody with some experience is what's required. There's a huge difference between them. And there's been a lot of talk lately about Mark Carney sort of being sheltered and kept aside. You know, as long as he's not talking, he's not screwing up. So, yeah, I think the whole thing is intentional and it's frustrating because it's just, you know, you just can't have a nice, clean system, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They can't fight fair at all. I don't know, whatever, but wait,
I know
we're not done yet. And then of course you saw this letter that apparently has been circulating around by someone in the bureaucracy at Corrections Canada that are getting out the vote and influencing the vote of prisoners, of people in federal penitentiaries. So
Larry Brock tell us about posted this. And, you know, he's a former Crown prosecutor, like, you know, really really solid guy. And when I saw this, I was like, what? And I clicked on the letter and I read it. And basically, you know, it's not uncommon to provide prisoners with a breakdown, maybe of policies or whatever, right? I mean, you see that in all kinds of different situations. But this is basically like it says, you know, if Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives win, you're going to lose your TV. You're going to lose some of your benefits. You know, leave it to the Liberal Party of Canada to court the violent criminal vote.
Yeah. You know? And don't worry, we will stop the Conservatives. If we get elected, don't worry, we'll make sure that all your charter rights are observed. So if you murder six people and we can get you out in 8 years, maybe you didn't feel well that day or whatever, then don't worry. We got your back. Just we need your vote.
Yeah. And you'll get your yard time, your TV time, your jug up, all your conveniences that you have in prison. We'll protect those.
Yeah. And you know, the Liberals criticize the Conservatives for, you know, having some association with licensed gun owners. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, they're like all in for mass murderers. It just it would just be great if they made it just a little bit more difficult to not pull out the big sheet of tinfoil. But wait, we're not done yet. Because when I saw that, I was like, oh, this must be fake. It's like, oh no, it's not fake at all. But wait, if you look at the mainstream media, and one of the biggest stories, like Mark Carney has since the second he showed up on the scene, he's been caught in some very major lies, like big lies. If Poilievre was caught like that, the media, it would be in the media cycle for 10 days. Mm-hmm. But even the best cut and dried one, actually, they were almost all of them are cut and dried. But anyway, I think one of the most significant ones, especially with in this environment of foreign interference, specifically from China, you have the Globe and Mail reporting, hey, this, you know, Mark Carney has met and has this partnership of sorts with this Beijing CCP linked group. And then Mark Carney flat out says, that's fake news. Don't believe everything you read in the Globe and Mail.
Yeah, I've never met them.
Yeah. And then it's like a picture from a month or two ago with him and that whole group at their function.
Yes.
And you know what? The media dropped it.
Sure they did, of course.
I don't know. I mean, I saw a little bit of it, but other than that, it's like ancient history, man. Right in down the memory hole.
Well, same with the Paul Chang thing. Gone, forgotten. Yeah. Like people freaking out over Buttongate. It's like, if he didn't fire the bounty hunter, he's surely not going to fire. These are the people doing his bidding. Like, these are his people.
it's just amazing. So I don't know. And it's like, I don't know how anyone can be surprised that there aren't a huge number of people that are paying attention in the country that are like, this whole system is really biased. I don't want to say rigged, because it's not by definition rigged, but it's like everyone is pulling in one direction.
Oh yeah.
And it's a direction that is horrible for the country. Forget guns, right? It's horrible for the national debt. It's horrible for infrastructure. It's horrible for the social, the fabric of our society on many different levels. You know, Mark Carney's already committed to rolling out massive censorship. He called like social media, like some like dens of misogyny and hate and whatever and extremism. Like social media is just like anything else. It's just powerful. So some of those messages, some of that dialogue gets amplified, but so does everything good. You know, you reconnect with people you haven't seen forever. You keep relationships that you could normally not keep without that platform. There's anyway, you know, so it's just amazing. But wait, we're not done yet. Ex-RCMP officer, prime ministerial, as far as I'm understanding, prime ministerial protection detail member / vice president of the National Police Federation. That's the union that represents all frontline officers of the RCMP, Pete Merrifield, and an associate of his came out with an open letter to an enormous scandal with national security implications just yesterday. Why don't you give us kind of the rundown?
Yeah, that's right. So I've got it right here. I printed it up actually, and it's an open letter that he's written in, and it actually includes, like, he keeps the receipts. There's a whole bunch of documentation at the end to support everything that he says in here. But these are some pretty serious allegations. So this letter is written by Sergeant Pete Merrifield from the RCMP. You're right. And he's all those other titles that you said. And retired Detective Paul McNamara from the Vancouver PD. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Chinese interference or foreign interference in our politics. Trudeau said there was 11 MPs that were compromised, I guess would be the word that you could use. Anyways, there's 9 of them listed here. So I'm not going to read the whole letter because it's quite lengthy. But he lists Marco Mendicino, Dominic LeBlanc, Bill Blair, David McGuinty, Anita Anand, Steve McKinnon, Melanie Joly, Arif Virani, and Chrystia Freeland. What's really catches my interest here is all 4 of the last public safety ministers, the very people who have their hands in this gun grab, are all listed in here. They all knew about this. And Mark Carney's been bragging since he became the unelected prime minister about his security clearance. He's got his clearance, you know, and he talks about Pierre not having it. If he received his security clearance and the briefings from CSIS, he knows all of this. He knows these people are compromised. And yet they're all still running for him in cabinet, except for Marco, who he promoted to his chief of staff. So yeah, this is, it's a pretty wild story. A lot of the YouTubers, I guess you would say, the social media people, they've picked it up, and there's a ton of videos out there about it. Of course, the mainstream media is slow to pick it up, but I do think it will catch on. They're going to have no other option. And I believe there is a press conference coming on Thursday between Sergeant Merrifield and McNamara, the two authors of this letter. But it includes a ton of documentation and receipts for proof that they knew. There's a whole bunch of allegations, foreign interference, sitting on arrest warrants, burying evidence. Like, these people in any normal functioning, proper democratic country, these people would not only be running in politics, they'd probably be in prison. So yeah, it's really difficult to not pull out the big jumbo roll of tinfoil at this point, because it is wild.
Yeah, well, in a serious country, they would be in trouble. It would take down the government at very least. These people would be in jail, probably anywhere else. But it's Canada, eh?
Yeah.
So no big deal. I mean, we want the Liberals to win, so let's just turn a blind eye to, like, literal international espionage and compromised CCP, you know, individuals in our government, and 4 of the last 4 public safety ministers. These are people, and public safety ministers aren't elected to that post. They're MPs that have been appointed. So as you said, just for emphasis, you have all these people being fingered as compromised, like working at some inappropriate level with the Chinese communist government. And these are 4 people that have been singularly laser focused on ignoring violent crime, doing nothing to stop that virtually, and singularly focused on removing firearms from people like me.
Yeah.
Like, that, if that doesn't get the tinfoil roll spinning, I don't know what will, because that's pretty weird, don't you think? Why are they so worried about people like me possessing firearms? You know, people get a criminal record check every day and they're compromised. Mm-hmm. And why all the public safety ministers? Like, why them in particular? I don't know. Just interesting.
Yeah, it is. This is, like, more concerning than actually any of the some of the goofy stuff, like stealing signs and button gate. But this is actual crimes against Canada that jeopardize the national security of our country. And you have to think, in this time of kind of global uneasiness, you know, there's lots of talk from Trump about we're not spending our fair share on securing our country, securing our borders, on defense spending, all of these things. The Americans know about this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's in here. They know.
Yeah.
So
You might wonder why Trump's giving us such a hard time.
Yeah.
He's probably like, man, these people are a problem for us down here. Yeah. That's probably what he's thinking.
Mark Carney not only allowed these people to run in the election again, he has circled himself with them.
Yep.
They are in his cabinet.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
And that's not a joke.
And
that's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
It's not a bunch of partisan hackery. Like, it's not a joke. And it's funny because the guy that was caught stealing, I can't remember the MP's name. So, you know, or the candidate's name. So forgive
me. George Chahal, the porch pirate.
No, not him.
Oh, yeah. There's so many.
Yeah. Not George Chahal. Is actually what his name was, but no, the guy that caught the lunatic leftist stealing his signs, and which is the viral video right now, up on X and some other places, but that NPC, right, non-playable character that he found stealing a sign, when he recorded him, he's like, why are you doing that? And he's like, because your party's evil, meaning the conservatives.
Yes.
Like, man, you know, I'm not a big fan of inflammatory language or trying to make the podcast as depressing as it possibly can be, because I don't want people to watch it because it's depressing. But wow, you know, like, that's literal, you know, you have these people that are completely broken intellectually and emotionally that think that the wrong people are evil, the exact opposite of reality. Just interesting to me. I don't know. It's quite an accomplishment.
Well, that, you know, I've never door knocked in my life. We've always had other kinds of election projects where I'm, you know, running around the country doing crazy stuff. So this is kind of my first opportunity to actually help my local candidate. And yeah, I refuse to go alone. Some people do, but I don't. There's no chance, because and even door knocking, you're offering them the people who are supportive. You ask them if they want a lawn sign and they're like, are you kidding? My house will be broken into. My car will be keyed. We can, you know, it's not just about disagreeing politically or disagreeing on policy. Like, people are afraid.
Yeah. Well, and the liberals continue to fuel it. Like, if you listen to how Carney's talking, it's just fear, 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 fear all the time. Fear and lies. Yeah. It's just, I mean, the CCFR, I know we've been talking a while, but I mean, this is relevant stuff, right? The CCFR was never meant, like, when I think back, it was never meant to be a partisan organization. It was never, we were never meant to go down this road where we are today. It's the political environment that has pulled us down this road because we don't have any choice. Mm-hmm. It's just really amazing. If you think of when you and I started, right, 10 years ago, like, where Canada was as a country then, it was just like, okay, well, you know, we don't want further restriction on, you know, sports shooters, collectors and hunters. Right. Like, if we think back, you know, it was nowhere near the intensity, and what is at stake today was nowhere near what was back then. It was just, when I think back, even though we're working really hard to change public opinion about gun owners, those days were easy emotionally.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They were. Yeah. I used to fret about, think about Ralph Goodale, good old sleepy Uncle Ralph.
Yeah.
You know, and that in the 2019 election, the goal was to drive that Liberal failure bus out to Regina and, you know, make him lose his seat, which eventually happened. He lost his seat. And I think back to what it was like then. You know, I had this rotating every 3-week meeting with public safety, you know, a fairly decent relationship with them. They would call me, I would email them, you know, and now it's gone to the point where you know, you've got the Minister of Public Safety calling us extremists and, violating the law. And I don't know. Yeah. Almost makes me miss Uncle Ralph. You know, things are a little more normal back in those days.
Yeah. It's really something you know, and it's not that long. Like, I realized it was just shy of 10 years, but it was really not that long.
Yeah.
Like, I had full it's transformation.
Fallen really far.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, we really have. Now, speaking of election stuff, I mean, in the last episode, we talked all about Operation Pitchfork and what it has morphed into. And I think I might have mentioned that that we're spending $300,000 or more. It's actually going to line up to around $400,000 of the CCFR is spending in third-party advertising on this election. And it's funny. It's Paulie was dormant for a while. And so they've chirped up again. Now they're all over Twitter again on X again. And they decide and they're trying to provoke us, obviously. Right.
Yes,
so, cause this is what course. They do. And so they've been chirping. They're like, oh, haven't heard anything from the CCFR. Like they don't, I guess they have only one internet connection. Maybe it's low speed or something to match their wit. But anyway, they now they're like, oh, where's the CCFR? They had the liberal failure bus and they had their brochures. Where are they? And I had to answer them. I'm like, what do you mean? Where are we? We are a registered third party advertiser. We're spending just shy of $500,000 on this election. That's where we are. And I don't know, you know, whether they didn't know that or whatever. You can even go to Elections Canada right now, third party financing, and you can look up even our first report. And that's, I think it's 175,000 somewhere around there. That's what we spent before April. Yeah,
that's
April,
just in that first.
Yeah, before April 6th, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, if they, and you know what? They're third party advertisers there and they didn't file a return on time.
Hmm.
I don't know, man.
Interesting.
Yep. But whatever.
Whatever.
So anyway, yeah, these people are incorrigible. Okay. Here's what's important. We got to wrap it up. We've been talking for 42 minutes, Wilson.
Okay.
Everybody's going to lose their minds at us.
Well, I know this is a long one, but it's the last one before the election. So
yeah,
everyone just bear with us.
Okay. And it being the last podcast before the election, it is critically important that we talk about this. So
yes.
What can we do? What should our singular focus be? So get out the vote. Tell us about that quickly.
Yeah. So get out the vote. We've talked about it before because that's sort of the way that our own third party political advertising has gone, but it's an actual project. So this will apply to every single riding across the entire country. So get out the vote is a project. Normally when we're door knocking, the point of it is to identify support, to find out, you know, hey, can we count on your support in the upcoming election? Blah, blah, blah. As soon as Get Out the Vote starts, which starts this Thursday of this week and runs from the 18th through to the end of day 21st. So those 4 days of advance poll voting. Get Out the Vote instead changes. And instead of identifying support, you're going to the houses that have already been identified as supporters. And you're going there saying, hey, great. We're happy you're supporting us. Have you voted yet? If it's yes, perfect. Thank you for voting. Have a great day. Move on to the next one. If they haven't voted yet, great. Get in the car. Let's go. We're going to go and vote. You actually physically get the vote out. Now, every single riding, every single campaign across the country will be doing this for 4 straight days over this Easter long weekend. So if you haven't volunteered yet, you're, you know, not real sure about door knocking or putting up signs or any of the various things you can do to help, this is your opportunity, and this is vitally important. Every riding should have between 50 and 100 volunteers doing Get Out the Vote. We're struggling here in my riding. I think there's 3 or 4 of us that have signed up. So I'm going to be looking for help as well. But the actual important thing is for those 4 days, the 18th, 19th, 20, and 21, they will give you a list. You just go to the door. Hi, conservative supporter. Have you voted yet? If not, come on. I'll take you. I'll bring you back. Let's just do it real quick. You can get back to your Easter eggs, but this is incredibly important. So if you can spare some time, find your local conservative EDA and get out and help them get out that vote and call it Get Out the Gun Vote. You know, the firearm people can really have an impact here. So if you don't know how to do any of that, pop me an email, tracy.wilson@ccfr.ca. I will help you find your EDA, put you in contact with them so you can volunteer. It's going to be critical, and it's Canada-wide. It doesn't matter where you are. If you're in a sure thing riding where the conservatives going to win hands down, maybe help a neighboring riding. But either way, we've got to get this done, and it's a perfect opportunity to pitch in. I don't know if all of this stuff is going to be effective. I don't know what the outcome of the election is going to be. But what I do know is that on April 29th, regardless of the outcome, I'm going to be able to say I literally did everything I could to help, you know, work-wise, volunteer-wise. I've been totally slacking at the CCFR because I'm trying to get out and help as much as I can. So I think if we could all do that, it will have an impact. So please contact your local conservative EDA, find out how you can help GOTV, and let's do it.
All right. Well, about the slacking thing, you'll probably see a small adjustment on your next pay, but you know,
that's, hey, if we win the election, like whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, really important. And then if you're anywhere around Nepean, that riding,
yeah,
go help Barbara Ball. Go help her. Yes. If there was a way to turn that riding around and keep Mark Carney out of the house,
it's the most important riding in the country.
Well, it is. And let me say this. Imagine if Mark Carney was kept out of the house and they ended up with a minority government. How motivated would they be to call an election in the next couple of years?
They would have to call one fairly quickly. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, mm-hmm. There's always a reason to try to help out. I know everybody's busy, but it's all or nothing right now. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And I know people are doing family stuff or whatever. You got some time off this weekend, even if you can go help for an afternoon, like, come on, man, everybody's got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Absolutely. And then I will, if you check out my X feed or Wilson's X feed or our social media stuff, we're going to be posting all of our Carney ads. I know they're floating around out there, but I'm just going to repost stuff like this and a link to download the Carney ad. So what you need to do is when you see those posts pop up on our social media, Tracy's, mine, whoever, if you fall across them or just check my feed, you'll see a commercial. And then in the actual, in the comments, you're going to see a link to download that commercial. Download all these commercials to your own computer and put them up in the replies and on all your social media and all the replies that you can everywhere across social media. That's where you can help as well. So if you're,
yes,
you know, go get out the vote, you know, whatever, certain hours of the day, come home and just spend half an hour on social media, spread that information around. And it's now or never, man. If not now, when? Right?
Yep, this is it.
Okay. We've been talking for almost 50 minutes. So
sorry, guys.
Well, there was a lot of information though, right? So
yeah.
Anyway, okay. The next time we will see you, we will know whether or not we have a conservative government or a liberal government in Canada.
That's terrifying.
It is terrifying, but anyway, it should just strengthen everyone's resolve. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Best luck and Godspeed to us all. Thank you for the update, Ms. Wilson, and we will see you next time.
We'll see you then.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 187 of the CCFR Radio podcast. You know, it's been a really long podcast. I'm not going to hold you up too long. Just if you share it, tell people if they're ever going to listen to a long CCFR Radio podcast like this one, this is the one to listen to. Man, have we gone through a lot of stuff, hey? Crazy what's going on in this country. Anyway, the next time we talk, we're going to know the outcome of the election. Can you imagine? It's been a long road, but we will know the outcome and then we will chart our path from there. So anyway, if you possibly have time, volunteer for your EDA. We have to do whatever it takes to get a Conservative Party government elected, or we got serious consequences. So anyway, all right, hang in there, everyone. Work even harder. It's a week and a half away, and we will talk to you in the next one. Take care.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.